This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is episode 210. The Cardinals did not make the upset in Kansas City. They fall 26-14. However, they didn't get embarrassed. They beat the spread, and there are definitely some good things to talk about. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, part of the USA Today family covering the Arizona Cardinals. Seth Cox is my co-host, as always. He's from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, and which is SB Nation's NFL site for the Cardinals. Seth, how is everything?
Oh, it's not bad. I mean, we're not talking about an embarrassing loss coming off a bye week, which I think is a positive. I mean, we're not talking about a team in complete disarray or a team that's quit on their coach, which is a positive. And, I mean, let's be honest, both were concerns that we had coming into this game was that maybe this would be just a blitz of the Arizona Cardinals by a what looks like a dominant and Super Bowl contending Kansas City Chiefs team. So those are some of the, you know, kind of more positive aspects of what we saw.
And so the Cardinals had opportunities. I mean, they didn't look awful. They had mistakes. They didn't do everything perfectly, but they were in a position to be able to potentially go down, take a lead, and really cause some problems for a Kansas City team that was red hot. And they held them to season lows in points and yards. They held Patrick Mahomes under 300 passing yards. And so we'll talk about we're going to talk through basically there's kind of four parts we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to do moral victories. Is there such thing as a moral victory? Was this game a moral victory? We'll talk both sides of that. Were we satisfied with the game? Obviously, they didn't come away with a win. And should the Cardinals, should the players in the locker room be satisfied with what happened on Sunday? From there, we'll look at the offensive line play. There's been some injuries. There's definitely some talk about the offensive line. We'll go over the offense and the defense and their play and look ahead to what should be a win this weekend against the Raiders. The Oakland Raiders come to town, a really mess of a football team, and it doesn't even look like that as an organization. They're even trying to win. So we'll look at some of the matchups. We'll look at some of the numbers in that. And so that's how we'll start the game. Let's talk moral victories. Steve Wilks said there's no such thing as a moral victory. The players echoed that. I talked to Antoine Bethea on the phone today for an interview I did with him promoting his book, and that was the message he said. I sort of disagree. I think that you can look at this game, and for the state of the team, you can consider it a moral victory. There aren't really moral victories in the NFL, but where the Cardinals are, I consider it a moral victory because they took steps in the right direction and they weren't embarrassed. They really could have won that game if with a couple extra executions, with a couple extra plays made. That was a winnable game, as crazy as that sounds. And I think coming out of the bye, even though they don't get a win, maybe for the fans, it's obviously not for the players in the locker room, is it? You really can accept moral victories, but I think them coming out and doing that, I think it really did something. It should be a huge positive for the team moving forward that gives them some belief and gives the fans some belief. And so I consider it a moral victory. I don't care what that means or what the franchise state is in. We are where we are. But so I will take a moral victory and I will accept it and I will move forward with that.
Yeah. And I think that's why the players and the coaches echo is like, this is not okay to, you know, to be okay with moral victories. And so I wrote about it on Monday and I just said like, or maybe it was today, I don't remember, but I wrote about it and I just said like, this is the current state of the Arizona Cardinals franchise. And I think you hit it on the head. Like, that's the unfortunate reality of it, is that this is the state of the Arizona Cardinals franchise. It may just be 1 year. It may be a quick turnaround, but for 2018, I think you have to be willing to look at this and say the Cardinals are a bad NFL football team. And because of that, you have to, like Jess said, you take the victories where you can get them. And so for players and coaches, it makes 100% sense. You cannot say, oh, well, we saw positives on this, or, you know, good things happen with this. No, you can't say that. But what you can say is, you know, our running game's looking better, but, you know, there's still plenty that we need to improve on. Those are the things that you can say coming out of this game. What you can't say is, oh, you know, we're getting closer as a football team, and, you know, this and that and the other, because that just makes it look like you're okay with losing. And so the echo, the sentiment from the locker room is the right one, right? Like, we're not okay with losing. This is not an acceptable thing. We're going to continue to press forward.
Well, right. And if that starts seeping in, say, hey, it's okay, we lost because we made progress. You know, no, I am satisfied. I am mostly satisfied with the outcome of that game, because as we both know, that was not a winnable game. We look at the schedule and we look at how things are playing out. That's not a winnable game on the schedule, and was likely an embarrassment like it was against the Broncos, which was supposedly a winnable game. Right. And so you go into that and you come out and they're not embarrassed. They're actually competitive, and they're a couple of mistakes away from maybe stealing that game and having maybe the upset of the year. Now, in the locker room, that's not okay, because you don't want them to accept losing. And so they say, you should have won that game. And that's the good thing that the coaches can do. It's like, look, we should have won that game. This mistake here, this mistake here. We are so close, but we should have won that game, and we're angry about it. And so we're going to do better. The sentiment was, they should have won. They did enough. They should have done more, but they should have won that game. But they did like what they saw, and that builds belief in the locker room. So it's twofold. It's upset that they lost a game that they could have won. And two, it builds belief. Hey, this could work, and this is beginning to work.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is like, you can't look at moral victories, because as a professional, you have to say, like, we need to, you know, we need to continue to get better. We need to continue to press forward. And then you have to look at it as, you know, we're a 2-win team. So there are no moral victories. Like, record wise, they are what, the third, fourth worst team in the NFL, on pace to win 4 games this year, finish with the top 5 pick. So there can't be any moral victories coming out of that. But for fans, we have to look at things on a spectrum. And I say this all the time, like, fans come in all shapes, sizes, and mentalities. And for fans that are just diehard, that are like, Cardinals are going to win every game, it doesn't matter that they're 2-8 or 2-7, whatever they are. And you know, this, that, and the other. So when you look at it from that angle, you understand the mentality. When you look at it from what you and I are talking about, we went into this with, like, look, the Cardinals don't really have a shot. This is not a winnable game. So we're looking at this as, do they get blown out? I think both you and I were satisfied with the turnout, or, you know, we were satisfied with the results, not happy with the outcome. If that makes sense.
That's a perfect way to describe that. Now, and for me, it confirmed, because when we were talking in this last game, the last show, I didn't believe they're going to get blown out. And so they rewarded my belief that things are going in the right direction, that I care about that. And while the locker room shouldn't accept it, I think organizationally once you, if you're looking at the state of the team right now, I think the organization outside the locker room can see this as a moral victory.
Well, and I think they have to look at it as this. It's growth in the right direction. So that's the hard line Michael Bidwill and to an extent Steve Keim have to look at right now. They have to be looking at this as, is this a positive or is this a we're just grasping at straws? And now that's a decision Jess and I can't make. That's not something that Jess and I can be like, hey, this is a good outcome or this is a moral victory. Like Michael Bidwill may just come down and say, hey, this is, you know, a bottom line business. And bottom line is we went from a team that won 50 games in 5 seasons to a team that won 3 games in 2018. And that's just not, we're, you know, turning over a new leaf in this franchise and we cannot go backwards. And so we're going to move on from Steve Wilks. So like that is, like you said, if they're satisfied with the growth, then that's going to mean Wilks gets another year. If they're not satisfied with that growth, then it doesn't matter what you and I think. And so that's, you know, we obviously won't know this until January, but that's where they're kind of at right now, is how do they measure the successes of this season? And what are their kind of standards that they're looking for? So I think when you come away from it, you look at it, you were happy that the team's unhappy with their performance and the results of their performance. You're happy that the team wasn't embarrassed, that, as Jess said, there were actually a chance for them to get pull off an upset. And in the end, despite what Chiefs fans on arrowheadpride.com thought, I was not crazy in projecting them to score 31 points. In fact, I overshot my prediction that the Chiefs would only score 31 points, because the Arizona Cardinals held the Chiefs to their lowest point total on the season. 26 points is the least amount of points the Chiefs have scored all season. Now, that would be the second highest for the Cardinals, but that's the state of two franchises.
Exactly. And with that, so moral victory or not, whether you believe it or not, things are going better. Now, not everything is going better, and that's what we're going to talk about next on the Rise Up Seabird podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, is one area that is woefully bad and yet a little bit promising at the same time. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And the offensive line continues to be terrible, but they weren't completely terrible. But now we're dealing with more injuries. They started the season with AQ Shipley, done for the year, torn ACL. Last week, John Wetzel, their top reserve, probably might be their most valuable offensive lineman on the team, neck injury, done for the season. And apparently it was bad enough at some, because on Instagram, he was seen with, I mean, he had the neck brace on for some things that he was doing. So obviously the neck injury was something serious enough to get him off and to have to put him on injured reserve. Now the Cardinals lose Justin Pugh. Torn MCL, just placed on injured reserve, the team announced on Tuesday. And so that, once again, they're snake bit. They're just snake bit with injuries on the offensive line. Is there anything that the Cardinals can do? Because this is not only a Cardinals problem, it's across the league. The offensive line is so hard to keep healthy all year. Is there just bad luck? Is it bad juju? Or are the Cardinals doing something wrong?
I think there's a combination of things. One, I think that their continued investment in cast-offs from bad teams is a problem that they're going to continue to see kind of poor results from their offensive line. The other thing is this. the guys they signed, and we can go back through the entire kind of time era, the guys they've signed to modest to large salaries. So first guy was Jared Valdir. Next guy was Mike Iupati. Then it was, from there it was Pugh, and then Andre Smith. And Andre Smith would kind of be on the like last end, low end of that. When you look at all of those guys, they all actually have one thing in common, and that's that their team, their franchise, the team that they were playing for, let them go despite having glaring holes along the offensive line. And the reason they let them go was because of injury. And so I've said this before, but I truly believe that one of the things that Keim is doing is looking at it from this lens. And that is, look, offensive linemen are very expensive. They're very expensive commodities. I think you have to look no further than this offseason when you saw Andrew Norwell, you know, get what, 15, 14 and a half million a year. Like that's absurd for a guard. And so what Keim has done consistently is find players that are nicked up, beat up, or coming off of injury that have played at a high level before, and he's gambling that they'll play at a high level again. If you look at all of the salaries that he's paid out, there's one thing in common, and it's that most of the money is actually funny money. It's not actually real guaranteed dollars. Now, Iupati and Valdir was different because he renegotiated both of their contracts and made additional money into signing bonuses down the line so they could push out those payments. But all of them up front, they didn't have these giant signing bonuses, but they were large in terms of like, oh, if you play this much, you know, you're going to get your $9-10 million. And same thing with Pugh. I think his guaranteed money was not even $20 million, if I remember right. And so when you look at all those, he's trying to get talent without having to break the budget. And from a standpoint of just trying to make things work with what you have financially, I think it's a solid plan. It's just unfortunately injured players have continued to get injured, and then the players that you've got to replace them are now getting injured. So it's just a calamity of errors, and I think the first part would have been preventable if Keim wasn't, and I don't want to say penny pitching, because it's not like he's going cheap. It's not like the offensive line is that cheap. Although I think they are like sixth lowest in terms of invested money in the offensive line in the NFL. But, you know, it's not like he's just got a bunch of no names and guys like that. Like it's just, he's tried to do it smartly and it just has not worked out for him. But again, I think injured players stay injured. I mean, that's a reality that he has to be aware of.
And the thing that you see with the Cardinals is that the issue ends up being, now obviously when it comes to the money, they that's skewed by the fact that they've got a third round rookie starting, and they've got DJ Humphries, who's a fourth year player at left tackle, which is a premium position, so it usually goes for a lot of money.
And Andre Smith's not on a high contract.
And Mike Iupati's was cut back down. So basically they're on a rookie, they're on two bargain veteran deals, you're on a first round pick, and then you have the high price free agent. The problem is obviously that And they just keep getting snake bit on this every single time. Is, you know, Justin Pugh missed 8 games last year. He's going to have missed 9 this year. Andre Smith misses games. Mike Iupati has missed games. Now, it's kind of interesting that the scouting, this kind of the self-scouting here, is the fact that if you look at the players that the Cardinals had acquired, Andre Smith, obviously, he's a starting capable player. Justin Pugh was on a bad Giants offensive line, and they didn't want him back. Iupati was on a good 49ers offensive line, but they didn't want him back.
And he was beat up at the end, and that's why
he was.
They didn't want him back, was because he wasn't missing large swaths of game like he has with Arizona, but he would play
banged up, just like he's done with the Cardinals. Like when he's healthy, he can be incredible and overwhelming, but he's always nicked up with something. And you could tell. So even when he's playing, and I think probably the biggest thing from the evidence of this we see is this last Sunday when he's inactive. So a 60% Iupati was better than an 80% Vinovich 2 weeks ago. But yeah. Once Vinovich got healthy, he was a better option than the stiff back Mike Iupati, who had played the week before.
Right. And that's what it kind of boils down to, right? Is that it's just hard to, you know, fix that. And I think the other thing is this, and this cannot really be undersold. And this is, you kind of hit on it with self-scouting. The Cardinals created a team, or an offensive line, I should say, not a team, but an offensive line. And these stats are just kind of stunning. So these are from Pro Football Focus, just so everybody's aware. But these stats are kind of stunning. So you kind of hit on it. Like Andre Smith, starting caliber-ish right tackle. I wouldn't say starting caliber, but starting caliber-ish. But here's the problem. Andre Smith allowed 6 pressures, three hurries, 2 hits, and 1 sack on Josh Rosen on Sunday. And he also committed 3 penalties. So basically 9 negative pass blocking plays for Andre Smith. And that's bad. I mean, that's really bad. His overall grade from the game was like 52 or 53. I can't remember. But his run blocking grade was 79.5. They've got all this talent as run blockers. DJ Humphreys and Andre Smith are both top 16 tackles in the NFL in run blocking grades per Pro Football Focus. They're also both bottom 16 tackles in pass blocking. So you have an offensive line that's built to run the football. You have a good running back. You have a rookie quarterback. So it seems like that would be ideal. But the team is consistently having to play from behind, which means the entire offensive line, like 1 through 5, all 5 of them are now playing at a disadvantage and playing to their own weakness. And so when you have that, and then you combine it with just a litany of injuries, it looks really bad, not just on paper, but on the field.
That said, like what you're talking about, there was progress made. Now, it looked early on in the season like the offensive line was just terrible, because the run blocking previous, like under Mike McCoy, the run blocking was bad. And now maybe that was kind of like bizarre. So the Cardinals really designed this team to run the football, play great defense, and don't turn the ball over with the quarterback. And in theory, that makes a lot of sense. In theory, that's a perfect way to start a first year in a transition team that maybe isn't going somewhere, but give them a chance. The problem was they ran the football poorly. The defense was atrocious out the gates. And then Sam Bradford, who was supposed to be a very efficient, quick-release guy, Bradford played terribly. And so the sort of all the bedrocks that they built the team on came apart because the defense wasn't any good. They couldn't run, and they got bad quarterback play, and therefore they were behind, and so they couldn't run the football, and therefore the offensive line, their personnel was made useless. And from there, where we are now.
Yeah, and that's what it is. And you're right. Like, useless is a great term for that. And like, you hate to say that because these are NFL players. They're extremely talented. They're, you know, in the top 1% of the 1% of every, you know, all athletes in the world. But the reality is this: they played awful in pass protection. And so when you have that, it becomes a really difficult thing for your offense to have any functionality, right? Like, you can't function when you're one-dimensional, and you can't do anything if you're struggling to pass protect. You can't do anything then.
Well, and that's the thing is especially so, and I'm going to give props to that Kansas City Chiefs. They made things look worse because the way that they're designed, they have, and on their edges, they got Justin Houston, who, while we've dealt with injuries, if you remember, listen to the show, Justin Houston might be the best edge overall, all-around edge player we've seen in a long time outside of Khalil Mack. But before Khalil Mack really emerged, Justin Houston was that guy. Dee Ford, he looks great. And so you've got two very proficient edge rushers going against tackles whose strength is not pass protection and putting them in a situation where the Cardinals were playing behind and had to throw the ball. And if you look at where those sacks came, they had – four of the five sacks came on kind of must pass drives late in the first half when you're trying to get down and score and get back in the game. They were down a couple of scores. And then in the fourth quarter, they also, you know, they're basically running out of shotgun, passing the ball, trying to get the ball down the field. And the Chiefs are made for that. They get up and they rushed the passer. And so it's made even worse. Nonetheless, it's not, I mean, you can't go on like that. So how do they fix it? Because, well, not Justin Pugh's down. You got a guy who's got, you know, if you've ever heard of an Ode Abushi, he started some games over the last few years, but now he's your starting right guard. We'll see if Mupati plays or it's Vunovic. Then you've still got Humphreys and Smith. And then you've got a rookie in Mason Cole, who has had his struggles, but there's promise. Got to hope that Ray Brown can do his thing, supposedly, and develop the players behind them.
Well, and that's the unfortunate reality now, is that they're just, you know, they were bad, and now they're injured, and they're likely still going to be bad. Like, because that's the reality of it. When you look at it from the lens of this, if they had better talent, you would assume that they would have been playing them, correct? But they don't. You and I joked about it, but it makes sense. This is why they have 11 offensive linemen on the active roster.
Well, it's only down to 10 now, at least until they sign someone else.
Well, but that's the thing. It's like, we joked about that last week, but that's almost unheard of in the NFL to have 11 active offensive linemen. Now, they weren't all active on game day. However, there's still 11 active offensive linemen on the roster. Like, that's just not something you see. And so I think, you know, we kind of joked about it last week, but they're to the point where they're just throwing stuff at the wall to see if it'll stick. Because, like you said, they've struggled. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They've been, I mean, struggling is putting it nicely. They've been bad. I mean, they've been kind of bottom of the league bad as pass protectors. And so, you know, they're finally getting their groove in the running game, but you can't run the football because you're behind by two scores. So it's like this weird juxtaposition that they're in every week, and that they've built this team to be a team that plays from ahead, kind of grinds out games and wins with defense and special teams. And they haven't really done that all year outside of the first San Francisco game.
Pretty much. And with that, we'll wrap up this section of this segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're done with the offensive line. We're going to talk about the offense and the defense overall, the good and the bad from the last game. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back from the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And let's talk about the offense and the defense. Now, we focused in on the offensive line, but there were some good things on both sides of the ball. Number one for me that I really, really liked, and I'm going to go to the defensive side of the ball, is heavens, they are improving defensively. And probably the most impressive part was, look at that third down defense. 36%, the Chiefs, who have been just dynamic this year, in 5 sacks against a team that hadn't given up more than 2 all year, and only 12. In their 9 previous games. This, I think that we're starting to see a defense that is almost there. Antoine Bethea told me, I asked him how close he said he is excited. He's like, oh my goodness, we are that close. It comes down to, now you could say this for a lot of teams, but you've got a defense that's playing quite well, except for like 4 or 5 plays. They're almost there on the run defense. And if it weren't for stupidity in the very first drive, maybe this game goes completely different.
Well, and that's, you know, you kind of hit on it. Like, they're struggling, and I think a lot of it's been that, you know, they've never – and this is an excuse. This is 100% excuse. But how often have Peterson Baker – Boston and Bethea all been on the field together in a game, not practice, but in a game. And I think it's only been 2 full games, because Benwickery didn't start until week 3, and then Boston got hurt week 5, right? And so he missed 6, 7, and 8, or 6 and 7, or something, or maybe it was 6, 7, and 8. And then Baker has been nicked up the last 2 games. So there really hasn't been a lot of time for this defensive backfield to work together, to communicate, to kind of get each other in positions to be successful. And it's something that we've talked about with Wilkes' defense. It's a very complex defense. The back end needs the front end to perform well, and the front end needs the back end to perform well. The front end's really held up their end of the bargain. They are, I think they're 3rd, if I remember correctly, in the NFL in pressures created, which is astounding. I mean, it really is when you think about how bad this team's been. But there's just been consistent issues, and they're not all game long, but they're on drives where miscommunication and mistakes all happen at once, and then it gives up a big play. We saw it in San Francisco. Despite what they say, I still maintain that was not a man cover 2. I still think that was a cover 2, and one of the linebackers miscommunicated on it. And then even this week, I thought we saw the same thing. You know, Peterson looked at Boston on the first play to Tyreek Hill, and then on the touchdown, Baker looked at Boston like, where's my help over the top? And so this isn't like guys throwing each other on the bus. And both times, I think Wilkes came out and said, oh, no, we were in man. He should have carried him. And it's like the way they played, even if you were in man, they then made the mistakes. Like somebody somebody thought they were in zone on all of those plays, it just by the way that they played it. So when you look at it from that perspective, it's really, it's telling that they're getting better, but there's still mistakes. And I personally, I just think it's because of lack of playing time together.
And that might be it in this defensive system, but we are starting to see positives. Now the linebackers play has got a little bit better. The run defense is better. Now they did. I mean, they still gave up, I think it was 117 yards on the ground. Let me check. What was it came out to be? Rushing yards, 118. 20 of those came on one Tyreek Hill run, which it's almost unavoidable. Patrick Mahomes scrambled for another 21. But Kareem Hunt, they really kind of held in check. It wasn't like the 2.5 yards per carry type stats. He was held to 71 yards on 16 carries, 4.5 yards per carry, but 35 of those yards came on two plays. Again, the point is the Cardinals' run defense has been impressive. Almost.
I think you can say that not just about the run defense. I think you can say that about the team.
Like, right. They had 10 tackles for loss.
They had five sacks. Five sacks against one of the better offenses in the NFL. So, like, there's so many positive things that you can take away from this that were just underscored by a negative outcome. Like I said, the results you were fine with, it was the outcome you didn't like, and that's just the reality of when you're a bad football team, is that you kind of hit on it. Like, you're really close to always being good, and that's the hard part. And so, you know, you talked about the defense. I think the biggest thing I saw in this defense in the second half was – they won the second half. The Cardinals haven't won a second half all season. So for the first time all season, they won a second half. They outscored the Chiefs 7-6 in the second half. Now, it's not what we wanted, because it was 20-14, and we were thinking, oh, the Cardinals are going to go down and score. And then, you know, a bad interception by a bad rookie mistake was made. But they won the second half, and that's something that we haven't been able to say all season.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing, like, on the downside, the defense, which has been solid in some games, the one thing that they had to do that they didn't do was create takeaways. They needed a takeaway to build on, and especially when they – gave away essentially at the beginning of the game. I get why they did it. They gave away a possession when they did the failed onside kick. And the defense still only held them to 3, but by not getting any takeaways, aside from the part where the Cardinals had 2, Chiefs had none, you almost never win when you lose the turnover battle. The defense needed to create a turnover, 1, to take a drive away, and 2, to put the offense in a position to do something, because, you know, while on the offensive side of the ball, what we're beginning to see is what the offensive identity is and their ability to control the football. But the defense was good, but it needed to do more, because that's what this team was supposed to be all year. It was supposed to be a dynamic defensive team that take the ball away, and that set the teams up for victory. They don't take the ball away, it's going to be really hard to win, especially against the Chiefs team.
Right. And well, and that's the thing, is we came into this game, we knew that they couldn't go, score for score with the Chiefs. There was no possible way they were going to be able to do that. So, like you said, they had to create opportunities. That's why they tried to force the onside kick, because the reality is this: whether the Chiefs get the ball on their own 1 or your 1, they're a little more than a coin flip to score. The Cardinals, on the other hand, are less than 17% likely to score. We're not talking touchdowns. We're just talking score, like just score points, put points on the board. So the Chiefs, the best way to beat the Chiefs is to simply limit the number of touches they have. So you do something silly like try an onside kick early in the game and just try to catch the other team, you know, napping or not thinking that you're going to do that this early in the game, and it works out. Unfortunately for them, it didn't work, but it was smart because whether you kicked it off or not, it was still a very high likelihood that the Chiefs were going to score on that drive.
Right. But on the offensive side of the ball, something I really liked to see is their sustained drives. Their two sustained drives. Now, granted, they were both, you know, one was at the start of the game and one was the start of the second half. Their ability to move the ball, albeit there is something in common with almost every single drive, the Cardinals will control the football if they make no mistake. So no penalties, no sacks, and basically no negative plays. If they stay on schedule, a term that Seth likes to use a lot, if they stay on schedule on offense, they can do something. Their first possession, it was over 6 minutes long, 12 plays, 65 yards, touchdown. Their first possession of the second half, it was 7 minutes and 48 seconds. They nearly took half of the third quarter, and they got the score of their touchdown. Six first downs, 12 plays. But they're not moving it at a great clip. Their first one was 12 plays for 65 yards. That's just barely 5 yards a play. 12 plays for 54 yards. That's 4.5 yards per play. So it's not like they are not chunking the ball down the field. They are methodically moving the ball effectively. And the number one reason why they were able to do that is the effectiveness in the running game. Yes, it was the Chiefs, but when they're able to stay on schedule and not make mistakes, this team can score points, but they have no room for error.
Right. Well, and that's what it comes down to when you look at it. Like, so here's what the problem becomes, and this is what we talked about, and it played out exactly like it was going to. The Chiefs had 11 possessions; they scored on 5 of them. If you take away their kneel down at the end of the game, they scored on 50% of their possessions. I mean, the kneel down, I understand it's a possession, it doesn't really count. So they scored on 50% of their possessions. The Cardinals had 11 possessions, and there was one kneel down, so we'll take that out, you know, to go into the half. They knelt down. So they had 10 possessions. They scored twice. So, I mean, literally what we talked about, what the stats say, all of it played out. Like, it played out. So the Cardinals failed because they were unable to sustain drives. They were unable to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands. And when you look at it, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 drives with 5 plays or less and 6 drives with 6 plays or less. And that doesn't even count the kneel down one. So 60% of their drives were 6 plays or less.
And they didn't, I mean, they didn't even get to 10 on any of them. So,
right. And so that's the thing. So when you look at it from that perspective, they're not wasted drives. I hate using that term, but against the Chiefs, they are, because this isn't a team. Like, if you have 6 drives of 6 plays or less against the Raiders, you're going to be fine. But against the Chiefs, against the Saints, against Super Bowl contending teams, when they play the Falcons, when they play, obviously, the Rams again, like, if the Cardinals do that, they're going to lose. And they'll probably lose by double digits like they did in this game. Heck, even the Chargers, like, they're going to put points up on the board. And the thing that's weird about the Cardinals is this, right? They're really bad on third downs. You know, we know that. But they're really good in the red zone. They just never get to the red zone. They're scoring 70% of the time they get to the red zone. And think about how many times they have gotten to the red zone this year, and it's been a turnover or turnover on downs. I think it's three. So out of 16 drives, they've only had 16 red zone attempts all season. That's unfathomable to me.
You look at the drives. They had four possessions. They had four drives of 10 players or more. Now, one ended up in interception. One, they turned the ball over and down. So this was in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter, second, last half of the fourth quarter when they're desperate. But the Cardinals are now showing, and this is the positive under Byron Leftwich. You know, people talk about, you know, he's a Bruce Arians guy. And I'm going to say, this offense still doesn't look like Bruce Arians. It looks a lot like Ken Wisenhunt. And let's be honest, Mike McCoy, Ken Wisenhunt, they're not too far different from the same guy. And that makes sense. But now we're getting the effective part. David Johnson is running the ball more effectively. They're calling better run plays. It's down to about 40% of his carries are now between the tackles instead of more than 60% it was under Mike McCoy. And they're using more screen passes. They used David Johnson more as receiver. And so as a result, they are having more success. We're starting to see more of what we want to see. You know, David Johnson hit 183 yards from scrimmage. That's fantastic. And
well, in the second half, we saw again, they started to force feed Fitz again. And it's weird that both games, that's been a second half plan as opposed to just a game plan, right? Like, it's almost like they spend the first half establishing David Johnson, and then they spend the second half establishing Fitz. And it's like you understand that you can throw and run, right? Like, you don't have to just do one half and then change it up. So I think that's just going to come with time for Leftwich. I mean, this is his second game as an OC. You know, things have to get better, right? Like, so I mean,
they really, like, you can't get too much worse, to be honest.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is, like, I was talking about red zone possessions, okay, or red zone attempts. The Cardinals literally, and I'm not even joking, they're literally last in the NFL, but they're eighth in red zone scoring percentage. Eighth. Like, that's crazy to me. They've been in the red zone 16 times. There are five teams in the NFL that have scored 11 times in the red zone, so as many as the Cardinals, or less. So it's not like they're incompetent. It's for the first time, it's the between the 20s that is really tough for the Arizona Cardinals.
Here's the stat that makes no sense at all. They have six field goal attempts all year.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, none like, of it.
Phil Dawson kicked 40 field goals in 2017, 40 of them. He's on pace for 12. And now that pace has actually gone down because he had 6 through 8 games. Now it's 6 through 9 games. He's had 3 games this year with no attempts at all.
Right. Not even no field goals made, no attempts. Like, we can't even judge if they made the right decision because he doesn't actually do anything. And that's not a shot at him. It's just a reality. And so that's the thing. That's the frustrating thing for the Cardinals is you have a team that is, you know, actually effective when they're in the red zone, but they're the worst in scoring percentage. So percentage of drives that end in an offensive score. They're the third highest in turnover percentage, which is, you know, really, really bad. They run the least amount of plays on average per offensive possession. They gain the least amount of yards per play on offensive possession. They have the second least average time per drive. and then they average the least amount of points per possession. So, like, every possession they get is a negative until they get to the red zone, and then they're all of a sudden they're like a really competent offensive football team. That's what, maybe it's just because other teams haven't seen enough of their red zone offense, so it's just so diverse and different, so teams don't know how to stop it.
Well, then it's only 20 yards.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. That's crazy to me because, I mean, I've never actually looked at the stats. I knew they were bad, but think about it, Jess. Like, there are literally teams that have been in the red zone double the amount of the Cardinals and scored less times.
Wow, that's incredible.
So it's incredible where their struggles are, because in the NFL, you would think with the way that defense is forced to be played now, with the way that the NFL has catered the game to offenses, you would expect that the number to get into the red zone would be much, much easier. But for the Cardinals, it's never been harder.
And with that, we'll wrap up this section of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. When we come back, we're going to look ahead to what should be an incredibly winnable game. It's the Raiders. The Raiders are coming to town. The one-win Raiders, the terrible Raiders, they're coming to town. And we're going to talk about the game in the final segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And the Cardinals get to play the Raiders at home against a team that is bad. I mean, you know, and likely worse than the Cardinals, because they took their best offensive player and their best defensive player, and they traded them away. Marshawn Lynch is done. Derek Carr has thrown 8 interceptions. He's completing a high number of passes, but not for a lot of yards. And yeah, and then defensively, they are not in great shape. They are offensively, they're converting on nearly 40% of their third down possessions, but defensively they're getting up nearly 50%. They've given up more than 1,200 yards rushing in their they 1-9, 1-8 in their 9 games. They are just bad. And they've given up 29 sacks. So Derek Carr might turn into David Carr. We'll have to wait and see. You know, they've only scored 15 touchdowns. They've given up 31. And yeah, so what can we expect to see from the Raiders this weekend?
Honestly, they're an awful football team. I mean, that's the reality of it. They're 30th in points scored. They average 16 points a game. They're 30th in points against. They average giving up 30 points a game. Their average margin of victory is 14 points a game. That's, like, again, that's unheard of. Even the Cardinals, who are, you know, by all intents and purposes, a very bad football team, they're at 11 points. And that's because their offense is on a historically low pace. Like, their defense is kind of middle of the road. So it's that crazy reality that the Raiders are playing for 2 years from now. They're not even, like, really – I don't want to say they're not trying, but they're not trying. I mean, we've like, heard
– obviously, players try. The organization is right. Not trying. They don't care about Oakland anymore. They're going to Vegas in 2 years.
But, and the thing is, now players are quitting. DRC, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie quit. Jordy Nelson is apparently going to retire. I don't know if that's true yet. They have no talent on offense because John Gruden's decided he's going to rebuild the team in his image, what he wants. And then defensively, they haven't had any talent. I mean, even in that year that they made the playoffs, and then Connor Cook played horribly for them, you know, they lacked a lot of talent. Tahir Whitehead's a nice linebacker. That's what I got. Gary and Connolly hasn't done much yet.
Mo Hurst
is doing okay. He's playing at a high level for a bad team. Bruce Irvin's no longer with them. They have eight sacks as a team on the season.
Hey, this should be the game, where David Johnson has a big game and Josh Rosen has a good game.
Right. Well, let's not jinx it, because this will probably be the game that the Raiders like double their. Well, that would be the thing. That's kind of what you and I talked about, right? Like, this is 100% the situation where you need this team to come out and play well. This can't be a game where they come out and fall on their face, because they are playing literally the worst team in the league. I mean, from every statistical to, you know, analytical to eye test given, they are bad. And so when you look at it from that perspective, they're a team that's going to continue to struggle this year. So the Cardinals, if they're moving in the right direction, as Jess and I talked about, it has to be this week that they get another win. You know, we talked about it like after the season and everything, like, or during the bye week, that there were probably only two more wins on this schedule. And we were, I don't want to say guessing, but we were hoping one of them would be down the line. But we both, in a very unreasonable way, felt extremely confident that the Arizona Cardinals would beat the Oakland Raiders. And so if they come out and don't do that, I think it's a bigger problem than any other loss this year would be.
And I guess the one other thing that you could say is, if the Raiders come to town and play out of their mind, and where the offense plays well, but stuff happens on defense, and but this game shouldn't be, I mean, it should ideally be an incredibly boring game that the Cardinals, like, I'm not going to, I mean, it's not like the Cardinals are going to put up 35 points on anybody. Let's be honest.
But this is a game where you should see what they want to do. You should see the vision starting to come to fruition. And I guess that's what my point is. Like, this is a game that you win 21-10 in a very methodical.
Right. 40 minutes possession.
Right. And a very methodical and violent and, you know, physical manner. This isn't a game you win 41-28 and you gave up, you know, two touchdowns late in the fourth quarter as you were just, you know, kind of getting guys in. Like, this is a game from start to finish where you just dominate and you win 21-10, and they kick a late field goal to get it to 10. Like, that's the type of game this needs to be.
Right.
And if it's not, that's where you begin to get concerned about the vision and where they're headed as a team, as opposed to like a win a loss, where I don't think you can come, like, I don't think there can be anything positive that comes of this game if they lose.
No, not really. I mean, it's not there. There are no moral victories in. There's not even a moral victory in beating the Raiders. There's only victories, and it's just a matter of how well you do it. Yeah, this should be the game. If there's a game where we see, like Seth is saying, there's a game where we see the Cardinals play to their potential, this would be the game, because they rush the passer well, which means they should rush the passer well, which means they should force turnovers. The Raiders don't rush the passer well, which means Josh Rosen should be protected, which means he should be able to look good, pick apart the field. David Johnson should be able to run the football. And it's the but it's not like they're going to put up big offensive numbers. They just should have the ball a lot, put up okay, like solid offensive numbers, and come away with a fairly easy by NFL standards win.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that's what you're waiting to see this week. Like, is this a game where you see a little bit of the vision of Steve Keim and Steve Wilks for what they're going to be, the post Bruce Arians era Arizona Cardinals and things of that nature. And you see David Johnson go over 200 total yards of offense. You see Josh Rosen have 225 yards on, 25 attempts and completing, 19 of those for a touchdown or two touchdowns. And, David Johnson scores two total touchdowns. Like, that's the type of game you want to see offensively. Defensively, I don't even know, because the Raiders are so bad now. Like, they have so little talent that I just don't know where, like, you see them succeeding. And so if they do succeed, it's kind of one of those things where you have to look at it in the process of the game, as opposed to predicting, like, oh, well, if they struggle against this, because if they struggle against anything that the Raiders do offensively, like,
they've gone backwards.
Right, exactly. Thank you. Like, I don't know how else to put it other than, like, the Raiders are a step below the Cardinals. And and so if you join them in that muck, it's gonna be a bad Tuesday on the Rise Up See Red podcast.
So what is your prediction? When I wrote my game capsule for the Sports Weekly publication that goes out every week, you might see it at airports and grocery stores, I picked a 27-13 Cardinals win. Where do you see it going?
Yeah, I'm right there. I would say like 23-24-10. Like, if I don't see how the Cardinals don't win this game. And quite honestly, I don't see how they don't – I don't want to say dominate, because dominate's strong, but I don't see how they don't control the game for most of the game.
Because
if they don't, again, it's one of those it's a step back. Like, even a win, like a scrape by the skin of your teeth type of thing is a negative against this Oakland Raiders team.
And with that, it sounds like we are ready to wrap up this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. With moral victories, offensive line, and a game that we feel fairly confident in a Cardinals win.
Yeah, so don't blame us if anything happens. We didn't change anything.
We did it. Well, maybe I did. I think I might have done that at the beginning. But I think the Raiders are bad enough that even a jinx will keep stay away. And so we'll be back next week talking about what should be a Cardinals win. Or maybe we'll be calling for everyone to be fired and the team to be blown up and run everyone out of town. We're out of jobs. So maybe that's what's up next. So until next week, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Seaward podcast. Thanks for listening, and go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.